Welcome to Tell Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Coming your way Sundays at 7 a.m. and 7 p.m., Monday mornings at 1 a.m., streaming live at richarddugan.com during those broadcast times. Podcasts are available at the richarddugan.com radio shows page and also on SoundCloud and iTunes. We're also on Facebook, if you can believe that. I'm actually shocked. I still talk about that a lot because of a lot of the controversy over Facebook of late. And I'm not worried because I haven't put that much information up there. So I'm not concerned about that. Plus, the Facebook page is designed to go to to the Tell Me Your Story website to guide people to the program, to the ideas, to the guests. And today's guest is no exception to the rule. We're looking forward to our conversation today. Our guest today is a very physical individual, you might say, and his name is Armando Hart, and he joins us via Skype. Thank you so much for joining us on the program today.
Thank you, Richard, for having me. It's an honor and it's a pleasure that you're providing your platform for me to share my views and to share my story.
Now, you have several points that we're going to talk about today, and one of them has to do with this is something that's rather interesting to me, especially because here in the West, most of our lives are, I'd say, rather sedentary. Where, as the phrase goes, we are constantly looking at our screens as if the screen, aforementioned screen, is an appendage. To some people, it is. It is a new right. appendage. and we aren't getting out and moving like we should. So we're going to be talking about something that you've developed called the Hart Method, and that's H-A-R-T, which is how you spell your last name. We're going to talk about the power of movement, how we can embody it once again using this particular method. I know that's a big issue as well, and we'll also get into some other areas as well, but let's talk about this aspect of movement, and not necessarily and exclusively to the issue of exercise per se, because we weren't designed to sit still. Rocks were designed to sit still unless moved by other forces. Trees do move, plants, animals, they move about, but we seem to have been designed especially to have that level of movement. Talk about that in light of this method that you talk about, that we're going to talk about, the Hart Method.
Yeah, I think you just said it perfectly, Richard. Like we are designed to move, and I think there's a part of us that forgets that we're actually in a physical body, and without this physical body, I mean, we're not able to do the things that we're able to do, and that even involves thinking and involves everything that we have in this physical body. And you know, for me, it's about going and incorporating and embodying that essence that we used to have when we were growing up and we loved to move. I mean, I always tell, when I'll talk about movement, I say, think back to when you were younger and when you were in your early years, 7, 8, 9 years old, and how joyous movement was. I mean, it just ignited joy. And it was just an amazing thing to experience. And for me, when I talk about to anyone how they are in a state where they're not enjoying movement or it's difficult for them to move or to get out there, to get motivated, to even go on a walk, you know, I think that's the first step is to make them understand that, hey, this is something that you once had. And something happened along the way where you lost this motivation because, like you said, we live very sedentary here. I mean, we're in our 9-to-5, so we sit a lot. And, you know, even that is not natural. So it's about reminding individuals that this essence is a part of us. And it's about remembering that and to move forward with that, to move forward with that essence and embodying that essence once again.
What was it that made you care about this issue of movement? What was the catalyst?
You know, the catalyst for me, Richard, was when I grew up, I had a hard time when I was in my in elementary school. I had a hard time connecting with my classmates. And that's because I was labeled as timid. I was labeled as shy. I mean, I had this fear of, you know, I think everyone had this fear of getting up and talking in front of the classroom. But I mean, I had a fear of raising my hand. I had a fear of talking. So I was labeled as shy and timid. But I was very alive in my head. I knew I wasn't timid. I knew I wasn't shy. But those were the labels that were put on me. But I had this really enriched mind that I was able to visualize things in my head. So one of the things that I would visualize was running. Like I said, you know what? Maybe if I am the fastest kid in the school, maybe I'll make friends that way. Maybe if I kick the ball the furthest, I'll make friends that way. Maybe if I'm the best soccer player, football player, I'll make friends that way. So I started to visualize these things in my head, and I started to act them out, but in my home. And I would drive my dad crazy because I would make balls out of aluminum paper and toilet and tissue. Like I would go crazy inside the home, but never at school. I was still that timid, shy boy. And still eventually I started to do that and started to express myself physically. And what I imagined in my head, I actually started to do. And the result of that was that I started to connect with my classmates. And I started to connect with my teachers. And for me, that opened the door to relationships. And I felt like that gave me the confidence to eventually start talking and to eventually start to express myself. So at that time, I may not have seen it, but with time, I started to understand the power of movement. And the power of movement for me was that it opened all these doors and avenues for me to express myself and to be connected with myself. And in that connection that I developed with myself, I started to connect with my environment.
How has this method helped you in what we'll term here, it helped you in your inner life, in that non-tangible esoteric construct that we talk about a great deal on this program week after week, program yeah. after program, in terms of staying in touch with that still small voice that can guide you to places that you can only imagine?
Yeah. You know, that's a very powerful thing. And I think as you asked me that question, the first thing that came to my head was that dream that I had as a little boy. When I was 10 years old, this dream of being an Olympian was in my head. And I didn't share this dream because I felt that if I shared this dream, I would be ridiculed. My environment was an environment that didn't dream big. There is just a lot of, you know, this belief that, you know, having a 9-to-5 with benefits was enough and was success, and driving a nice car was a symbol of success. And for me, I felt like I needed something bigger. I wanted to have a purpose. And just having this dream and keeping that dream alive was something that it just opened so many doors for me. And I was blessed enough to keep that dream alive in my head. But I think your question, if you can maybe go deeper into that question and really? how it applies to the actual heart method, or?
Well, not only the heart method, but also just you and your life. I mean, you've developed this program that is designed to help people to move and to reacquaint themselves
yeah.
with their physical bodies. But you and I both know that the physical body isn't the most important aspect of who and what we are. It's that essence that animates
right.
the physical body.
Right. Exactly. Well, as like I was saying, I think it's connected to what I was saying, actually, because that dream of being an Olympian, eventually I got to the point where I was 5 weeks away, 6 weeks away from competing at the Olympic Games. That's how close I was. I actually qualified And I got so close to this dream, and 6 weeks before, I tore my hamstring. And at that time, it was a very challenging experience. I mean, imagine that 10-year-old boy whose dream was to be an Olympian, and years later, he is 5 weeks from actually competing in his dream, and to be snatched away just like that. I fell into a depression, and a couple of years later, I had the opportunity to train with one of the best coaches at the time. His name was Tom Tejas, and one of the things that he told me, which I think was a turning point for me in developing this method, was, you know, you have great potential, but you have to put your foot down. And that comment actually was a life-changing moment for me, because I asked him, like, Coach, what do you mean to put my foot down? My whole career, I've been trying to force my body to move forward, to drive my knees up. Everything was the opposite of what he told me. He goes, just put your foot down. And I started to understand the power of that tip, because if you think about a ball, ball, you know, those bouncy balls that go all over the place.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Let's think about that.
Yeah.
So we only acknowledge when the ball bounces up. So everyone says, wow, look at how high you bounced it. Or look at how high it bounced. Look at that bounce. We acknowledge the going up. And that was, for me, how I was moving my body. I was only focusing on going up. But if you really think about it, the ball going up is a result. That's a result. The coming up is a result. What action actually creates the going up of the ball? What prior action? It's the ball going down. It's the ball being thrown down. And what's underneath the ball? The ground. So, you know, there's two other components that were left unseen. The ground, which was actually why the ball bounced up, and the actual action of that ball being bounced down or being thrown down. And that was the comment that he was trying to tell me. In essence, he was telling me, drop the ball down, throw the ball down. I wasn't doing that. I had no focus on driving my leg down, on putting my leg down, because he could tell that I was just focusing on just coming up. And that for me was actually why I think I got injured. And it was a traumatic injury, because I was missing these two other components. And I started to put my foot down. And if you really think about it, in society, we don't acknowledge those times when we go down, those times when we are in a dark space. And I really believe, like, you know, that's really where, if we are really present during times when we go down and we accept it and we embody it and we own it and we ask for support, because that asking for support is very important. And that for me is what the ground represents physically. You know, so I started to move my body that way. I started to put my foot down, and I started, I understood that the ground was there for support. And then the result was the coming up of the opposite leg. So I started to feel better in my body. And I started to do that in my life too. I started to put my foot down in life. I started to, understand the power of relationships. And if something felt out of harmony, let's say I had a relationship that felt out of harmony or was toxic, I had to put my foot down. If I felt that I wasn't doing things that were making me happy, whether it was a job that I wasn't fully satisfied in, I had to put my foot down, even though that's really difficult to do. But I think there's a real power in putting the foot down, not just physically, but also in life, which is for me the message of the heart method.
You know, it's interesting the way you describe that, because I had a situation in my work experience back at the in 1998-99 where I don't know, maybe this was my form of putting my foot down in that regard, as you've described this. I refused to give the general manager the satisfaction by quitting. I absolutely refused. I wasn't going to quit doing what I was doing, trying to improve the station. And eventually they phrased it this way. They laid me off and gave me what is unheard of in broadcasting, a severance package of 2 months' pay, which told me that I knew and they knew that they had done something wrong. They were not treating me the way that I should have been treated.
Yeah.
But I wasn't going to let them force me out. I was going to stick it out until the very end, whatever that end was.
Yeah.
By the same token, that isn't necessarily the best path to take, because a lot of times what you end up losing is a lot of yourself in that process of hanging in there until, shall we say, the final portions of the stern of the Titanic have gone beneath the water. And now it's too late for you to escape, because now you're being sucked down by that whirlpool.
Yeah.
So I guess it's a question of sort of using that intuition that we have inside of us to question, what should I be doing here? Which direction should I go next? Because that's what it's there for.
Yeah. I mean, and that's a perfect example. When I actually had that traumatic injury, I actually fell into a depression. We ultimately have the choice to rise back up, you know, and I was in a hole for a couple of years. I mean, I physically, my body didn't feel right. Mentally, I didn't feel right. Emotionally, I didn't feel right. Socially, I didn't feel right. Financially, nothing was going my way. And I was a victim. I was playing that role of a victim. Why me? Why did this happen to me? Which is very common in all of us, right? When something negative happens, why me? Why is this happening to me?
Yeah.
And it's good to ask those questions, because eventually, you know, the more questions that you ask yourself and the more that you talk about it, eventually there's going to be a light that you're going to see, and you're going to follow that light. And that's what's going to eventually help you rise up. But, you know, all those experiences, negative experiences, dark experiences, they're necessary for the soul. I really feel like those are necessary. But once we start to understand, like, this is happening because I am moving forward. This is happening. This going down is happening because eventually I'm going to rise up. And sometimes the longest falls create the higher bounce.
Well, that's true. Absolutely.
Yeah. And it's true with, like, if that, you know, when I talked about the ball, if the ball is coming down, it's being thrown down further, it's going to bounce up further, you know. And that, for me, that was my experience. I really went down, and we ultimately have the choice. Do I remain in this space by being a victim? And we can remain in that darkness, remain in that gap for a long time. And that is my message, is that that doesn't have to happen, but it's a necessary experience. The going down is necessary. And people are asking themselves, well, you know, I'm not a runner, I'm not a sprinter, and I totally understand that. But this is not just for athletes, although I do work with athletes. I mean, it could be as simply as going up a few set of stairs, or if you have stairs in your home. If you really think about it, if you really become mindful of going up those stairs, if you really think about it, when you are going up those stairs, most of us are just trying to get up the stairs and say, hey, we're not even thinking about it. We're just unconsciously going up. But my message is about being conscious as you're going up those stairs with every single step. So as you're going up the stair, if you really think about that foot that's right underneath you, and that action is, for me, the power of being in the moment, the power of now, that action that you're right above your center of gravity, and your focus is on making contact with that step that's right underneath you.
Yeah.
And what happens with that is that once you start to put your focus on that, guess what's going to happen? The opposite leg is going to go up for you naturally, without effort, because that's how the body works. And once you start to understand that, you're going to feel better in your body, because that's the way the body is meant to move. So when that coach was telling me, Armando, run like that child, you see how he's running? He actually pointed out a child, because I was asking him questions. So, like, what do you mean put your foot down? He said, look at that child running. He's putting his foot down. And this child looked joyous when he was moving. I mean, he was bouncing, and it was just like joy. It was such a pleasure to watch. And what that told me was that children, and we all had this essence of moving our bodies like that. So this is just a reminder, and children do it naturally. So when if you really think about it, if we're going up those stairs unconsciously, our thoughts are going to be to bring the leg that's behind to the front. And that's a, and that's not a power position, because you're just basically bringing the leg that's behind and you're just thinking about moving it up to the other step that's in front of you. So there is really no focus on the now. And if you really, really look into it, the leg that's behind for me is a metaphor for the past. And when you bring it to the forward, mm-hmm. that's a metaphor for the future. So there's really no fulfillment there. So I found that I was doing that when I was moving my body in that way, and I was living my life in that same. I was bringing my past into the future, and I never felt fulfilled. It took me a while to develop that presence in the now, and that's hard to do because sometimes this is done subconsciously. We bring our past into the future, or we bring it to the present, and we're never really satisfied or fulfilled with the results.
Yeah.
And the power is in really being present. So my goal is for people to simply just, you know, go upstairs, or if they don't have stairs, to go on a walk and to understand that there's that message there in the body. When we're walking, it's not just about moving your legs forward. If you really think about it, there's two forces at play. There is an actual action that's going back, that's going down and back, and that's the leg as you're moving them. And you're going to think about this when you get off your seat, Richard, and start walking. There's this action and force that's actually moving back as the opposite leg is moving forward. So it's there. It's in the body. And that for me is it's a constant reminder to be really in the present, to be in the now.
You know, the analogy that I share with a lot of folks when I'm doing these programs, I'm looking right now at the screen, the sound recording software that I use. It shows this white line. Now, this particular white line isn't in the center. It's off to the right. But as you look at that white line on the left side, I should start with the other side. On the right side of the line, there's nothing. It's just the center line of zero that passes through that white line that's vertical. And we're talking about a horizontal line. Now, on the other side of that vertical white line, you see the wave being created. And when you see that wave created on the screen, that's already the past. That's already what was. The words that I have spoken, the sounds that have come out of my mouth and emanated and been transformed via the microphone and all the electronics into what I see on the screen, that's in an instant, it's already in the past.
Yeah.
The other side is the future. Hasn't happened yet. Hasn't been created yet.
Yeah.
And so that now moment that you're talking about is that white line.
Yeah.
Where there is no past and there is no future. And you made a very interesting comment regarding children, as far as, you know, this gentleman who told you to put your foot down.
Yeah.
And of course, growing up myself in a family who attended Mass on a regular basis, and my basic underpinnings have been obviously a biblical and or Christian. The thing that came to my mind when you said that was that passage in the New Testament from Jesus that says, come to me as little children, not childish, childlike.
Mm. Mm.
And we adults, we lose that. So,
we lose that.
I mean,
yeah.
And so then I would ask you the question, maybe this came to your mind at that moment as you were being mentored. When was the last time you ran with that kind of abandon, with that kind of just joy and exuberance and excitement? I mean, I kind of had the same kind of growing up as you did in school. I didn't really fit in either, and so I got into track and field. I learned to run really well because it was the best way to keep away from the bullies.
Yeah.
You know. But, you know, that seems to me a real good question. When was the last time you ran with childlike abandon?
I mean, I used to do it all the time. I mean, as a child, I used to do it all the time. And then I lost that. I lost that essence. And the last time that I can remember doing that was at a track meet at USC. And this was one of my first races at the NCAA Division I level. And I didn't know anyone in the race. So I didn't know how fast they had run in the past. I didn't know anyone. I was just in myself, and I was just happy to be there. And I remember just as soon as the gun went off, and I had all these nerves, and I had all this anxiety before the race. I was so nervous. But as soon as I told myself, you know what? I've taken care of myself. I've done everything right. It's going to be okay. It's going to be okay, even though I still had those nerves. And as soon as the gun went off, you know what, Richard, I got into that race and I was just so in the moment. I had no thought. And I had no thought that I actually ran through the finish line. And like Forrest Gump. Have you ever seen Forrest Gump?
Oh, yeah. Several times.
I just kept running. And if there wasn't a gate at the end of that track, I think I really would have kept running. A gate held me back.
Yeah.
And I was actually, I didn't think I had run that fast. I was just happy to finish the race. Honestly, I'm like, I'm just happy those nerves are gone. I got over it.
Mm-hmm.
And my coach tells me, he goes, I think you just broke the school record.
You were in that zone.
Yeah, I was in that zone. And it was just, and I go, really, coach? He goes, I think you did. And he had timed it with his hand timed. But eventually, you know, it's electronic timing. So they have to, it takes a little while to get the time. But it turned out to be, he was right. It did turn out to be a school record.
Wow.
And now that I think of it, you know, I was in that moment. I wasn't thinking about who was in the race. Maybe if I knew who was in the race, and it actually turned out that I beat some pretty decent sprinters. I mean, this was against USC. And I think if I would have known who was in the race and what their times were and what their stats were, I would have been two in my head. If I would have thought about what to do in the race, I would have been two in my head. I was just in that moment, and I was in that zone.
Yeah.
And that was a result. And I looked back at that race and I looked at how physically I was moving. I was bouncing. It was amazing to watch after that. And I always think about that whenever I'm in a moment where I'm thinking too much. I'm like, just be joyous and don't care about what everyone else is doing and just be in yourself. That's what I tell myself.
Well, I can agree with you. And I took the same philosophy at every radio station that I worked for. I neither cared nor wanted to focus on the competition.
Mm-hmm.
If that's to me, the general manager, the sales manager, the program director. That was not, from my perspective, that was not my job. My job was not to monitor the other stations to see how we could outdo them. My job was to monitor us. And see how we could be better today than yesterday and how we can improve and be better tomorrow than we were today.
Yeah.
That's always been my focus. Now, have I ever thought, as I watch various championship series or finals in various sports, where's my Olympics? Where's my World Series? Where's my NBA Finals? I've looked through some of the trade magazines and I hear some of the news about this person winning this Mike Award and that award and the other award and so on and so forth. And the ego gets in there and wants to
mm-hmm.
take over and say, hey, how do we get ours kind of thing. But I will tell you that when I am in the middle of something like this interview, or if I'm in the middle of producing somebody's podcast or a commercial or some other radio program that I'm not a part of other than as the producer, I get into that zone. I'm listening to what's being said. And maybe during the breaks, I might offer up, hey, why don't you think about talking about this or this or this or this, because my mind is constantly moving, if you will, to use your metaphor, to come up with more questions. As I've said many times on this program, I don't ask the questions. The universe asks the questions. I'm just along for the ride. To that end, was there someone or some event that took place in your life that told you, I need to put this down in a book, I need to create a website, I need to come up with a name for this thing that I've developed that I'm using just for myself because I need to share this with the rest of the world? Where did that start?
It started when I made that connection, when that coach told me to put my foot down. I was reading books on how to be a better person because I didn't like, I didn't love myself. When I didn't love myself, I didn't love others around me. So I started to read. I was reading books on spirituality and I just wanted to be a better person. And I also saw that comment in one of the books as far as the command to put my foot down. So once I started to make this connection between my body, my physical body, my physical movement, and my life movement, that's when I said, I need to write this down. I need to share this. You know, I technically, you know, there was this failure. I don't like to call it failure, but, you know, at the time it was a failure. I felt like a failure, but I felt like I was a failure, but now the purpose was coming.
Yeah. You know, you also said something too here that I wanted to touch on, and I'll have you continue. You said that at one point you started to use the word hate. And again, it takes me back to the one law that was created, if you will, in the New Testament, the law of love. Love your neighbor as yourself. Now, not only is that a guiding principle, but it's also a statement of fact that shows us in a real way why our world is in the mess that we're in. Because we aren't doing that. We are loving our neighbor as we love ourselves, but we don't love ourselves.
Right.
And so what are we doing? We're loving our neighbor with the same self-deprecation and loathing that we have for ourselves.
Or loving our neighbor inauthentically.
Yes.
Right.
Maybe a better way to put it. Yes.
Right. Because, I mean, and that also is not true love. I mean, I think you said it right there. That's the key. And loving ourselves. And it's not just about telling yourself in the mirror, I love myself. I love myself. I love how I look. I love it. And,
those affirmations. What you mean. Yeah. Yeah.
You know, it's not about that. It's about understanding, and it's about really being in yourself and understanding why things are happening. Okay, why do I continue to choose that food that doesn't make me feel good? Why do I continue going out and having those drinks that eventually are not good for my health? You know, why do I do that? And to really go and introspect and ask yourself why. And in asking yourself why, you know what? God, the universe will respond to that.
Yeah.
And there will be support to that. And it's up to us to have the courage and to go into those places that are not, I mean, they're not pretty. And they're not sexy.
No.
You know, and
but,
that's love.
Yeah.
That's
but
love.
They are part of us. And yeah, that's where we are having the biggest struggle in our world today. We are unwilling to acknowledge, it's not that we live by it, but we're not willing to acknowledge the fact that we not only have a light side. People will say to you, maybe Armando, or to me, oh, you're such a light. You're such a blessing to the rest of the world. Yeah, but I have a dark side too. I don't live by it. I don't run my life by it. And I could if I didn't think that my life had meaning. Hey, I can go out and I can rape and pillage and plunder because it doesn't matter. My life has no meaning.
Yeah.
But I believe, just like you do, my life has meaning. So I'm not going to do those things. I'm going to try to live from that other side. What was that? I think there's an old Indian story about two wolves, you know, and there's a dark wolf and a light wolf, you know, and they're going to battle. Which one's going to win? Well, which one are you going to feed?
Right.
And, you know, that's really important. We're talking with Armando Hart. He has the Hart Method, and we're going to continue talking about that. Here on Tell Me Your Story, we're going to take a quick break, and we're going to be right back. Don't go away, folks.
Tell me. me your stories. I'll do my best to understand you.
Welcome back to Tell Me Your Story. We're talking with Armando Hart of the Hart Method, and we're going to tell you also that you can go to his website. Yes, he has a website, folks. In this day and age, who doesn't? Who doesn't have a website? And his website is Armando Hart, H-A-R-T. That's A-M-A-N-D-O-H-A-R-T.com. We encourage you to go there. It's great to have him back here as we continue talking more about not only the Hart Method, but also some of the other things that that he has experienced in his life. There was something that I know for some folks is it's sort of a sensitive subject in this day and age, which is really kind of unfortunate. Because it's something that, quite honestly, we do need to deal with, because it's part of the physical world in which we live. You're talking about the physical body and movement, how important that is for us to help us to sustain life, our own lives, for that matter. But you also, you're very proud of the fact that you are a first generation Mexican American raised in a, and you were raised in a high. In a high crime, low income environment, but then you basically wanted to go to, as you said, you had that dream of going to the Olympics. There are folks, and I would have to put myself in this category, who never have really focused on certain aspects of their heritage. Now, I just had my DNA tested a few months back, and it turns out that I am about 10% Irish. That's the percentage that I focused on more than anything.
Yeah.
Now, maybe one of the reasons why I didn't focus so much on what the only term I can think of is the Hispanic part of my life from my mother's side. And when I got the DNA test, I sort of subconsciously found out why. It's because, you know, there are seven continents on the planet, right?
Yeah.
My DNA is from five of the seven.
Wow.
Okay. I've been saying this since I was a kid, that I'm Heinz 57. Okay. I'm from everywhere. All right. And some might say, oh, he's a world citizen. Well, yeah. I don't have just one or two or three. I've got hundreds, if not, North, Central, and South America, Africa, Asia, the Middle East, Europe, Ireland, England, Wales, Scotland, probably Asia in terms of that aspect.
Wow.
And yet there would be those who would look at me, because I know they've seen my picture, and they say, you're so focused on Ireland, but you have that Spanish, that Hispanic look. Now, first of all, those terms I have had a hard time with. I hear Latino, I hear Mexican, I hear Hispanic, mm-hmm. I hear this. Mm-hmm. And I had a gal who worked for me back in Phoenix. I made really, really mad once, because I was chatting with her, nice conversation, and said, something along the lines of blah, 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 your Hispanic heritage. And she turned on me like she was going to snap my neck.
Wow.
And she said, I am not Hispanic. Mm. I am Spanish. Her family came from Spain specifically.
Wow.
I made an assumption. Okay?
Yeah.
I made an assumption.
I was under the belief that Hispanic was from Spain and Latino was,
and then there's Chicano,
South America,
right.
Central America,
right.
That's what I thought, but
yeah,
maybe I was wrong.
I don't know, but then you also have Chicano. Okay,
right. Chicano's Mexican. Yeah,
right. And it's like, okay, I'm trying to wrap my head around this, and I never really followed through with pursuing any aspect of that part of my heritage. Because this was more primarily on my mother's side. And, of course, the family on her side, very much into farming and ranching and horses and rodeos and, and so on and so forth. Very much connected with the earth.
Yeah.
You refer to yourself as a first-generation Mexican-American. Now, have you ever...
Yeah, so that would make me a Chicano, like you said.
Okay, all right. You said it, I didn't. So, we can and cannot say these days, because we don't know if we're going to offend someone, and I certainly don't want to do that.
You know, That's very unfortunate. And I really, you know, it's for me, you know, you could call me, I mean, pretty much anything, and I'm not going to get offended. I'm really not going to get offended. And, you know, I may voice to you maybe my displeasure, but in reality, you know, for me, it comes down to, if you really are in a position or you really are in a state of loving who you are and knowing who you are, no matter what papers say, no matter what Ancestry.com says, but if you know who you are and love yourself, it's hard to be offended.
I think that that's a real key. And I've often thought myself that that first and foremost, by virtue of the fact that you and I, we are here, we are talking, we are breathing, thinking individuals. First of all, we belong to the human race, first and foremost. Okay? So as far as being connected to the rest of the world, we are, because we are members of the human race. All right? Then there's the next level. The next step is that, as you've stated, a Mexican American, you were born here in the United States, as was I. So we are Americans, right?
Yeah.
So we're part of that smaller but rather influential clan. We're Americans, right? And that's where I stop.
Yeah.
You are included. And I've said this same thing to members of the trans community, the LGBTQ community, whatever minority, and I use that very broad term, whatever minority, at the very least, you are a member of my family because you're a human being.
Yes.
So you're a member of my family, and nobody can tell you any differently.
Right.
You know?
Yeah.
And that's a struggle for a lot of folks, because they want to, for whatever reason, they want to put up these walls, put up these barriers between the various differences that supposedly and allegedly divide us.
Yeah.
It's like,
as you're talking, go ahead, ask your question.
No, I was just going to say, talk to us a little bit about that, because I think that it's something that, that we need to discuss. So we need a clarification from different perspectives as to how we can not only feel included or inclusive, but be inclusive to others.
Yeah, as you were talking, I the word that comes up to me is responsibility, is to take responsibility for you. And that for me is why I talk about these principles of essence, of ground, to put your foot down. That doesn't mean putting the foot down doesn't mean kicking anyone else.
Yeah. You're not taking a stand to take advantage, to exert your power.
Exactly. You're taking a stand to own yourself and to be responsible for yourself. And in that responsibility and that ownership of yourself, you're not going to kick anyone. And you're not going to point fingers. And you're not going to create barriers and walls. You're not going to do that. And there's less anger in you because you start to feel better. You start to understand that, hey, even though it was hard for me to put my foot down, I really feel like I like the results of that. I'm taking responsibility of myself. I'm taking responsibility of my life. And, you know, when I hear other people express their views, as long as they're not creating more fear and more hate and more anger and more divisiveness, you know, I'm okay with people expressing their views. I'm okay with that, because they're being who they are. As long as those views are about being who they are and being true to who they are, as long as it doesn't, like I said, create more divisiveness, I'm okay with that.
Yeah.
And allow me to do the same.
Yeah, exactly. It goes both ways. There's also a wonderful concept that James Redfield talks about in his book, The Celestine Prophecy, about how we, you and I, Armando and Richard, and everyone else, we have messages for one another. And it is it is our responsibility to share those messages, not in a belligerent proselytizing way, but when the opportunity presents itself, you put forth, you know, your essence, your authenticity, if you will, because that helps the other person to start to put the pieces of their puzzle together, and vice versa. They share with you their authenticity, those messages that they have for you, so that you in turn can do the same. It's like, because we're all trying to understand who and what and where and how and why and when, right?
Yes. Yes.
And yeah, we could go into a cave somewhere and meditate and go inward, and we might be able to find those answers that way. I'm not criticizing that method, because there are those who choose it, and then it works for them.
Right.
But I would say for the vast majority, that's not going to happen. And that's why I've often said, too, that there are enough planets in the universe that each one of us, yes, all 7.5 or 8 billion of us, could have our own planet and live solitary lives. However, that's not the reality. The reality is we're all here together. Ergo, my logical mind thinks we should be working together. We should be working together to elevate ourselves and everyone else to a higher consciousness.
Yes. You know, as I'm listening to you, I think you used the word harmony.
That's one of your eight maxims.
That's one of my eight maxims, and it's a big one, because when I talk to teams, I talk about, and sometimes I'll talk to teams and coaches say, "Hey, my team is having trouble getting along. There's this player that doesn't get along with this person," and so I go in there and of course I do the physical movements and I do the physical drills. And then I talk about how for the body to move in complete harmony, there are different parts of the body. It's not just, there are different parts of the body. You have an arm and you have a leg. Mm-hmm. There's two different parts. So those are two different players. So if one of the arms is damaged, it's out of integrity. So what happens is that the opposite leg is going to say, "Hey, that arm is not doing its job. I'm going to make up for it." Or so what happens is that now the leg is out of integrity because it's not fully doing its job the way it should be. Right. So now it's making up for something else. Now it's making up for that arm.
Right.
And then that leg is out of integrity. So guess what? Another body part's going to say, "Well, that leg is not doing its job. I'm going to have to make up for it." Mm-hmm. So this goes around the whole body, and eventually it comes back to that initial arm. And then somehow that arm tries to do something, it tries to make up for all the body, it tries to make up for something else. And all of a sudden there's an injury.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I really talk about that to teams and make them understand that you guys are a team. So if one player is out of integrity, guess what? Another player is going to start to make up for that player. Exactly. And all of a sudden, the whole team is out of integrity. Yeah. And that's how things go on a downward spiral. And it's the same thing with our world. We're not fully in ourselves. And it all starts with the individual. It all starts with us, with me, with you, to be in harmony. If I'm in harmony within myself, that's the first thing. Am I in harmony with myself? Am I in integrity with myself? And that's key.
Yeah. The body is made up of trillions of cells. And I've used this analogy on a number of occasions to try to sort of hammer this point home, as you've just described. There are many different isms under which we have lived as human beings over the centuries, the millennia that we have been in existence. And I ask the question sort of rhetorically, but actually I ask the question of people. If each of the cells in the body, like each of the individuals in the United States, decided that they wanted to go off and do their own thing, they wanted life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, they wanted individuality, privacy, and to just do whatever they wanted to do, what would happen to the body? it would fall apart. It would disintegrate because the cells, which make up the body, have to be in harmony and in unison. And when you take that to the level, the macro level of humanity, it's the same thing. And right now, we see millions of people who are physically, as individuals, they're physically out of harmony.
Out of harmony.
They're in dis-ease. And then you take it up a level, up a notch to the race of man, and you see how diseased and out of harmony he is, with all of the skirmishes and the bickering and the fighting and the carrying on that's going on, because as it is above, so below, and vice versa. So, as you said, it's got to start with me. I need to get myself on track. I need to get myself in balance, in harmony, in integrity, authentic, living authentically, before I can expect the world to even come close.
Right. And in that, you allow for you to, I guess, intervene in someone else's harmony, because if you're fully in harmony with yourself, you're less likely to intervene in someone else's harmony.
True. That's true.
I see, and what, not that it bothers me, but it's not optimum when we see something on the outside that's not working. Let's say, whatever issue we're experiencing right now in this world, or in our nation, that, you know, we think a law or this new law is going to help it. We create a lot of change on the surface. And no matter how much change we create on the surface, superficial change, it doesn't really create the change that we ultimately want to see. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I think of, you know, when I used to be more as a, like when I was a personal trainer and actually worked with people that wanted to lose weight, is that, you know what, it's easy to lose 10, 15 pounds if we focus on just losing 10, 15 pounds. You know, if you force yourself to lose those pounds, but guess what's going to happen if you lose those 10, 15 pounds? That's still you underneath.
Yeah.
It doesn't matter. You may feel good and accomplished and feel and look and you know, fit into those jeans or whatever, but that's still you underneath those 10, 15 pounds that you lost. Mm-hmm. They're still you. And that's not real change. It's superficial change, yes.
Yeah.
But it's not long term real change.
Yeah. I myself, for a couple of years, I was monitoring both my weight and my blood pressure because I was diagnosed with high blood pressure. So I take my pill regularly until I get to the place where I don't need to anymore, because I've taken care of what's going on in my head. But I was doing that for a couple of years. I still have the memos on my phone tracking day by day. When I would go in, my wife works at a clinic, and we would go into one of the rooms where there was a blood pressure cuff and a scale. And then I would put the information in there, and I would watch my blood pressure fluctuate up and down and up and down. And the weight would work its way up to where at one point I was at 200 pounds. Now, physically, I didn't care for that, but it was the psychological impact of those numbers, the two followed by two zeros, that's what bothered me.
Yeah.
And I thought, you know, I don't know if I'm at my ideal weight or if I'm above it or where I'm supposed to be. I mean, 20 years ago, I was at 175. You know, I'm not sure if that would be healthy for me today. You know, I just don't know.
Right.
But I've gotten it down now to where I'm comfortable as long as it's below. And it's great when I see 195, 193, 191. If it's in the 180s, terrific. I had to stop doing that because it was generating way too much stress, probably affecting my blood pressure readings. I had to just stay in the moment of where I was, be happy with who I was and the weight that I was. I mean, I'm not an overeater. I'm not obese, but certainly there's always room for improvement. I'm sure you would agree with that, even with yourself.
Yeah.
But there was, I think, probably accurately, there was a level of obsession over this. And I finally realized that, and I said, you got to stop. So I stopped. And yeah. I've actually felt better ever since. And every once in a while, once every 2 or 3 weeks, I'll jump up on that scale.
Yeah.
And I went to my doctor, and the day I went in a couple of months ago, 121 over 83. Hey, I can live with that.
Right.
Now, I also know, too, having done some research, that a lot of the numbers that we get from our medical support team, if you will, our doctors, et cetera, they fluctuate not only from day to day, but sometimes from hour to hour. And so that was something that I had to take into consideration. You want to weigh yourself in the morning before you've eaten anything, because if you wait until afternoon or evening, you've already had three meals.
Right.
You know, and you're going to weigh a little heavier.
Right.
And then there's the other element, too. You're an individual, Armando. I'm an individual. And our numbers are all going to be a little different.
Yeah.
The way we look. I mean, we all look differently. And that is something that amazes me more than you can know about the incredible creativity of the universe. When you hear the word tree, you might think of one thing, one image, right?
Right.
I can't stop running the various images through my mind of all of the different trees that I've seen.
Right.
All the different shapes and sizes and types and so forth. And it's
right.
Like, wow, that's just incredible. So when you talk about getting people to move, getting people to put their foot down, and then they raise the other foot and put it down and raise the other foot and put it and they start going, walking
right.
and or running. I mean, I love
right.
walking. And when my knees or my ankles are sore and I can't, oh, I am so upset because I miss being able to get out there and self-locomote.
Well, Richard, listen to this. When you're walking, like I said, you're not just your intention is to walk forward, right?
True.
And like I said, there is this force of the leg that's going back. So that is what I call negative force.
Right.
And then the opposite leg that's going forward is positive force. So next time you're walking, you're going to really feel like there's these two forces at play while you're walking. There's a negative force and there's a positive force. And like you said, we all have light and we all have dark within us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that going back is the dark, the going forward is the light. And once we acknowledge that within ourselves and to feel that when we're moving forward, when we're walking, guess what? You're going to have a longer stride. You're going to have a little bit more bounce to your step and you're going to feel happier. Why? Because when you do that and you start to walk with more joy and you're actually going to have a little bit of more of a bounce, that is, like you said, that child.
Yeah.
Because children love to bounce because it ignites joy. And that joy is going to exude into your environment and that's going to create change. And I mean, that's why I love to walk. People ask me like, yeah. You look like you're in great shape. What do? I walk. They're like, yeah, you walk. Yeah, I walk. I walk. Mm-hmm. I go upstairs. I don't do that much of a workout. And that's my message is to people that don't, and it could be very overwhelming for people to exercise and do all these, you know, CrossFit programs. And there's a lot,
yeah.
You know, there's a lot of things that we can do and it serves a purpose for many people and it's great, but there's some of us that don't have the capacity to work out like that. But many of us have the capacity to walk and to really feel connection. And if you have, I really feel like I'm more connected to my body doing these limited, not doing these crazy workouts. I'm more connected to my body and I'm able to carry that connection over to my day. Like once I understand that there's these two forces at play when I'm moving forward physically, there's also going to be that same in life. When I ever go through a negative experience, I said, hey, I'm moving forward. This is part of me moving forward. Okay, I accept this experience. Let it be. I own it. And guess what? The opposite is happening. The moving forward is happening.
Mm-hmm.
And that it's about minimizing those negative experiences in life, you know, and knowing that they're going to happen and not getting stuck in it. And one of those things is taking responsibility for yourself and not being a victim.
The heart method is what we're talking about here on the program, and it is comprised of 8 maxims. They are ground, gravity, integrity, joy, harmony, freedom, now, and action. And you can find out more by going to armandohart.com. We will be linked to his website as well, and we encourage you to go there. You'll also be able to hear this interview in its entirety at the website, richarddugan.com, the radio show's page, also on SoundCloud, as well as on iTunes. And Armando, first of all, I want to thank you so much for taking so much time to share with us the quite honestly, these incredible ideas and concepts developed by you, comprising the HART method. And also, should you ever find yourself in the Santa Barbara area, you know, we'd love to have you in studio to continue this conversation. And who knows, maybe we'll hook up a couple of mics and we'll go for a walk.
That'd be great. You know, I think I could talk for hours. I think we could have a magical conversation that could inspire many. That'd be great. I'd love to do that.
And before we let you go, three final questions, as I like to ask my guests. The first one is, who is Armando HART?
I have no idea.
I like that. That's good.
Armando HART is a label that I guess I put to my essence, you know? It's just the title, yeah. Right? I mean, I was born Jaime. That's my birth name. Armando is a birth that I was given through baptism. And there was a point in my life when I started to feel different, and I felt like Armando was something that I wanted to be called. So, and it might change in the future. You know, I think we're continually evolving, continually changing. And once we do that inner change, our outer, you know, our surface environment changes. So that was part of that change. Not that I'm going to change my name every time I evolve, but you know, that to me is like, what is it? What is the name? It's just a title we put to whatever energy we're feeling, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
What is it that you hope to or want to achieve through the work that you're doing now?
I used to have this goal of changing the world, but that became too overwhelming. So I realized as I started to evolve that when I change myself, when I change my world, it changed my world. It really did. It changed my environment. It magically changed everything on the outside. So my goal is to change one's world. And I know that by changing one's world, I'm changing the world. So if one person gets something from my interview or my book or my training session or whatever, that is changing the world. So that would be my goal.
I do have to say that I have come across some wives' tales that I personally have disproven. One of them is that you're told time and time again, you can't change other people. And I say that is not true. Because when you change yourself, you're going to change the people around you. They're either going to want to get closer to you because they like what they see and hear, or they're going to want to get as far away from you as possible because they think you're a nut and mm-hmm. you've changed them. So it mm-hmm. is possible. Okay?
Yeah.
The final question is, what is your life's purpose?
I think that goes in line with my answer to changing the world, your second question. Even though sometimes I feel challenged, but my life purpose would be what I'm doing right now. And right now what I'm doing is talking to you and to be fully in this, to be fully in what I'm doing right now. And because I think that's one of the major things that equals harmony is to have a purpose. And I think sometimes we feel like our purpose is outside of us, or a job or a career or something that, you know, something that is outside of us. But in reality, we all have a purpose because we all have the opportunity to be in the moment, whatever you're doing, that's a purpose. And it has a ripple effect. So my purpose, Richard, is what I'm doing right now.
Well, Armando, I thank you so much for taking this time and for sharing with our audience the things that you are doing through the Heart Method, available through your website, which is armandoheart.com. We encourage folks to go there and to get more information, to follow through, and just see where you are in 30, 60, 90 days, maybe next year, who knows. By the way, I have to say that I don't know who your hairstylist is, but I like them. Because they must be mine, too.
Do we go to the same one?
We must.
You know what? It really helps my budget.
Yeah, absolutely. Although, of course, I now have the beard and mustache, and I actually broke down and I went into a brand new barbershop that opened up on our main street here. And the money aside, just the experience of sitting down in that chair and having this guy trim and sculpt, as he puts it, my beard and mustache, and having the kind of conversation that I had with him was worth even more than what I paid. You know, because I like you, I could talk all day, and some people would say, "Would you please shut up?"
Right.
But it is one of those things that I am, you know, just really, really thrilled about, and it's really kind of neat how we come across folks who are, you know, they're really trying to find those new ways of living, and you've created a new way for people to look at the way in which they live, and rise up above it, and move forward, and live out their life's purpose and the dreams that they have, just as you have.
Yeah.
Yeah. Again, Armando, thank you so much. I'm Richard Dugan. This has been Telling Me Your Story, New Paradigms for a New World, giving you choices and knowledge of those choices to help make your dreams come true. Until next time, love to Lal.